I'm Jacob. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 24th, 2021. I have a sponsor, and I'm qualified to sponsor other men. My home group is Three Legacies on Wednesday night at the 24-Hour Club in Naples. I was not expecting to be asked to do this. Otherwise, I'd be wearing something different, and I would have my big book with me. And I was not expecting to be recorded. It's all really cool. Be careful what you pray for, right? My story always starts the same way, because that's how it starts, right? My story starts when I was 3 years old. My first coherent memory was in the backseat of my mom's car, bawling my eyes out in Southbridge, Massachusetts, asking, "Where's my daddy?" I don't remember if she gave me a coherent answer, but who cares, right? You're a three-year-old child. Nothing's gonna work. From that very moment, I didn't know it at the time, but from that moment, I had a fear of everything. I was afraid of, especially abandonment. I didn't know it at the time, but my biological father was like I am, and the addiction won over his choice to hang out with his only child. So moving forward a little bit, I was scared of everybody, everything. I was very shy as a child. My friends who know me now have a hard time believing that when I tell them that I was a shy child, but we'll get into what broke me of that shyness in a minute. I didn't have any friends. I enjoyed my first blackout when I was 8 years old. There was a guy who lived up the street from us with his three children, and he saw us playing in the park with his son one day and came down to our house and asked us if we would like to ask my mom if we could celebrate, have a sleepover party at his dad's house, for his son's birthday. And my mom was like, "Yeah, that sounds great. Night off from the kids." And I was like, "I hate that kid. I don't want to go." And she was like, "Well, it's too bad. You're eight. You can't make decisions for yourself." And I was like, So I went up there, and his idea, I'm not qualified to diagnose anybody else as an alcoholic or an addict, right? But if I was, I would say this guy definitely displayed certain symptoms. His idea of babysitting six prepubescent children was to drop off a big blue cooler in the middle of the room, be like, "Have at it, kids." He made a shotgun the first one before he walked away, and I remember I turned it up, and I drank as much of it as I possibly could without, as much as I could before I spit it out. And as it was going down, I was like, "This tastes like shit." And then my next thought was, "Oh, wow." And that fear that I'd known since I was three just kind of disappeared, right? Just went away. The last thing I remember from that night was two of the kids from the party holding me down on the couch when my little brother jumped on the back of my head like a trampoline. Woke up the next morning, and I was like, "I want to do that again for the rest of my life as much as I possibly can." It's obvious procurement issues for an eight-year-old, right? But I promise you, every time that I blacked out that night. Every time that I drank, it was alcoholically. There was not a time when I drink as fast as I can, as hard as I can. And I started using other substances around the age of 10. I will refrain from talking about those because I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you want to know, we can talk about it after, right outside. I was 11 years old when I moved to Florida from Massachusetts. I thought that it was going to be a chance to reinvent myself. I was going to be popular. I was going to make sure that I was popular. I didn't know it at the time, but wherever I went, there I was, right? So I got here. And Northern Florida, it's kind of podunk, if you know what I'm saying. Not what I was used to. And I didn't have any friends. I had people that I hung out with me, but they weren't my friends. They were just people to get what I needed. And they helped me party as much as I wanted to. So one day I bought this, my older sibling bought this substance from another kid, told the kid that I would pay him back for it. And I was like, "That's stupid. I've got $800 in my pocket right now, but he's not getting $10 of it because I could spend it on this instead. Why would I pay him? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. But yeah. So the kid found me at a party and told me, give me my money. And I'm like, no. And he started hitting me. And he was like about up to there on me. But he was real fast, and I'd never been in a real fight before, so I didn't know what to do. And if any of you have been hit in the face real hard, maybe you identify with that white flash. That's all I could see. It was flash, 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 flash. And the next thing I knew, my hands went up for the first time in my life without being on a substance, and I reached out, and I punched him in the mouth as hard as I possibly could. And up until about 3.5 years ago, if I told you this story, I would have told you that I knocked him out with one punch because it sounds cool, right? But the fact of the matter is I'm a liar as well as an alcoholic. I'm a liar, I'm a cheat, I'm a thief, I'm a bully, I'm a womanizer. I'm all my character defects, there's countless. There's too many to count, right? So, and I don't say these things with pride. I just say them because people have to know. Like, I have to be able to be to talk about these things. So, for the first time in my life without a substance, the anger welled up, right? And from that point in time, I didn't win that fight, but from that point in time, when I saw the look on his face after hitting him one time, I realized I was bigger than most people. So, if I'm afraid of something, I react with fear. If I'm afraid of something, I react with anger immediately. I break things. I'm not one of these people that's going to tell you that I learned so very much from my fourth step. One of these people that told you when I came in here, I didn't think I'd hurt anybody. I went out of my way to hurt people. You are standing in front of what I need. I'm going to move you. That was my life. So, a few years later, I was working at Publix, and this homeless guy walked up to me and asked me for a few dollars so he could buy his next drink. And I was like, give me a few, like, it's not important. It's not really that important. It's, the important part of this story is that I was like, yeah, let me go cash my check. And I came back out and he was gone. And when I saw that he was gone, I did something unheard of and I went and hunted him down. This homeless man that I've never met before, I probably would have never saw him ever again in my life. But I went and hunted him down because I need validation from everybody. I need people to see how great I am. Look at me. I take care of the homeless, right? So I went and found him. I had to go through three other homeless guys there to ask him where he was. Thankfully, he was very distinct. He was missing an eye, had a long, straggly beard like Pai Mei from Kill Bill, was missing an eye. Did I say missing an eye already? I don't know. He was missing an eye. When I asked these homeless guys, where is he at? They were like, why? And I was like, because I owe him this money. And they were like, what about me? And so I spent $15 to find this homeless guy so that I could give him five. And it's 2 hours have gone by at this point. I find him and he's completely forgot about me. And I'm absolutely crushed. I'm just like, this homeless guy doesn't know who I am. And so I sit there and I talk to him for a minute and it clicks to him I don't think he realized who I was, but he realized what I had done. And he was like, screw that, dude. Sit down. We got a 30 rack of beer. We got a half gallon of vodka. And we got some other stuff on the way. I'm 19 at the time. I can't buy alcohol. I'm like, hell yeah, dude. I just found the gold nugget. Every day I'm working at Publix, and instead of going into Publix instead of going home to this house I'm paying to shower, wash my clothes, brush my teeth, normal stuff, I'm getting out of work, and I'm going over here to these homeless people in Gainesville on the 75 ramp, and I'm hanging out. And I went 2 weeks without doing any of that stuff I just described. Went to work every day, nobody said anything. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, I just found, like, the gold mine. And then, still nobody's saying anything, right? This homeless guy walks up to me one day and he's like, hey man, you want to go to the rainbow gathering? And I'm like, I'm not gay, bro, but if that's your thing, that's cool, right? I don't judge. My great uncle's gay, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, no, no, no. And he explains it to me. I forget his explanation to me, but my explanation to you is it's just a bunch of hippies in the woods. doing hippie stuff. You can probably figure it out. Use your imagination, right? So I was like, oh, hell yeah. So February 10th, 2007, it's the only tattoo I've got. That's the day I became homeless. I'm going to shorten the rest of the story because I could tell war stories all night long. I could tell war stories for a week without sleep, and some of you would just be like, oh my God, am I a real alcoholic? But the fact of the matter is I was homeless for 15 years. I've been to every state except for Alaska and Hawaii, hitchhiking and riding freight trains. I've been to jail in more states than the average American has visited. When people talk about they didn't think they could possibly be a real alcoholic because a real alcoholic is the guy who lives under a bridge with a brown paper bag and a trench coat, I still to this day think to myself, I didn't have a trench coat. That was me. You can read my story in the back of the book, My Bottle, My Resentments, and I. It's not actually my story, but it is the closest thing you can come to hearing it in the book. I still got a long time. Okay, cool. Let's get into it. So 4 years ago, I showed up to Naples, and I was going to hike the Florida Trail to the Pinjote Trail to the Appalachian Trail. Combined, it is over 6,000 miles of hiking trail. I was going to do the entirety of it barefoot and record it to put it on YouTube and get on one of these Discovery Channel shows. And then I was going to become famous and get all the money and the girl, and that would just fix everything, right? So I'm going to flash back a little bit to one of the only homeless story. I'm going to tell you two homeless stories because they pertain to step one. The first one is I was out, I don't remember what state I was in. I was out in, let's call it Illinois. And I got drunk and I was trying to do this thing to this person. And I was hiding behind the booze. These eight hippies that I was with stopped me from doing it. The next day, I woke up before any of them, which is astounding because they didn't drink the way I did. And I'm sitting there before the sun comes up thinking, how am I going to make them think that I am the victim and they hurt me? And as they get off the school bus that we're all traveling on together, I can see from 100 yards away that their faces are like, I'm not going to be able to manipulate them, right? Plan B, without thinking about Plan B, is violence. I'm not going to win that fight even with my knife. There's eight of them. And I was not opposed to using my knife, right? So Plan C, without thinking about Plan C, was to bold-faced lie. I told them that I don't remember anything from that night, that I was blackout drunk. I couldn't walk from myself to that handrail right there, but I remember everything from that night. Then at the end of that conversation with them, a two-hour-long conversation with them, I told them that I would never drink again. And I told myself I would never drink again. I cannot tell you how many times up until this point I said I would never drink again, and maybe a few of those times I meant it. But I know that this time, with every fiber of my being, I meant I was never going to drink again. 5 to 7 days later, I was drunk on the side of that bus, propped up against the tire, six-pack here, fifth here. One of the hippies walked by and he says, it really bothers me that you said you never drink again, and here you are less than a week later drunk. And I was like, there's not eight of you, what are you going to do about it? The reason I tell that story is because, regardless of how you describe it, that is the epitome of powerlessness. When I want to start or stop doing something with every fiber of my being, and I can't, what else would you call that besides powerless? The next story that I have is, nobody wants to hang out with me anymore. It's about 4 years later, and I'm in Sacramento, California. At this point in my story, it is worth mentioning that I've been without a substance for 3 or 4 days. Don't know. I wasn't keeping track. And I'm sitting there looking. I'm broke. No money. Every place around to get the stuff from has too high a security. So I'm looking at this decommissioned train bridge over the Sacramento River, planning on killing myself, filling my rock full of backpacks, tying it off with every bit of paracord that I can find, and jumping into the Sacramento River. I have no idea how deep the water is, but I'm going to kill myself. And I'm ugly crying on this bike trail. And this guy walks by, and he starts talking to me. And I don't know how long he spoke with me, but as he went to walk away, he gave me a $20 bill, presumably for food. My first instinct was to go to the liquor store and buy a fifth of whiskey to build the courage to kill myself. I walked out of that liquor store, and I pulled that cap off that bottle and I turned it up and I drank as much of it as I possibly could without risk of vomiting. And as the booze went down, I felt that same feeling that I did when I was 8 years old. I felt the alcohol change my blood. And I started laughing. And I was like, why do I want to kill myself? Life is magical. I'm the king of this planet. I own everything. I take what I want and give nothing back. Nobody can stop me. I am God. That was my thought process. That's unmanageable. That's the second half of step one, unmanageability. My life is not unmanageable when I thought it was the car and the house and the dog and the girlfriend, and those things are nice, but if I want to kill myself, that's my unmanageability. Whatever it is to you, I can't tell you. Step two is kind of difficult. Step two is really easy. I had somebody come up to me one time and they asked me, are you willing to believe? Or do you believe that I believe? And I was like, yeah, I believe that you believe, but you're an idiot and I'm the smartest person that's ever existed. And I looked them dead in the eye when I told them that. And they were like, oh, shit. Then they walked away. And then I met my sponsor, right? The gentleman talked about sponsorship and how important sponsorship was. My sponsor, he didn't ask me if I believed that he believed. He knew better. He was a previous, he was a former Hell's Angel in a sect called Satan's Rejects. He was the only man capable of handling my story. He asked me if I was willing to believe. And I was like, yeah, I'm willing to believe. Why not? Like, what's willingness? Like, yeah. And he was like, cool. Step three. Step three, before I got this man that I just told you about, I got to step three all by myself. I called my original sponsor and I was for the first time and I was like, we're on step three, how do I do this? And he was like, Jacob, shut up, we're starting over. And I was like, you're lucky you're on the phone with me because people don't talk to me that way. Step three, first to know really understand step three, right? It talks about, in the big book, it talks about the actor who wants to run the whole show. It goes on and on about, like, it doesn't really matter. Actions matter, right? But my intentions behind the actions are even more important than the actions themselves, right? Why am I doing this? Am I doing this to help somebody, or am I doing this because I think it's going to make me feel better? The answer typically today is both, right? God, I wish I had my big book with me. I was not expecting this. Yeah, I need to rely on my infinite God rather than my infinite self. When I start to rely on myself, it's always a shit show. It always craps out. The gentleman looks like he's bringing me a big book, but it's not my big book. But my big book's different, you know? Just like me. Terminally unique. That's me. Step three, which is God. Yeah, I know what it says, but it doesn't have my notes, right? It doesn't have the things that I would take and say to another to somebody that I'm sponsoring. And I should know them by now. But I'm scared to butcher them, right? And that's me. That's me living outside of step three. What is my will in my life, right? My will is my way of thinking. My life is my way, my actions. I had a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, before I ever stepped foot in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. People come up to me when I say this, and they point at step 12. And they say, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's what it says on the board on page 59, right? But let's switch to flip to page 75 real quick. The fifth step promises. If anybody wants me to point these out to you after the meeting, these are my favorite promises in the book, because this is the first time in my life that I felt a sense of relief. It's the first time in my life that elephant stood up off my chest and I could actually take a deep breath. So the fifth step promises, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect ease and peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. It goes on, but that's my point, right? If I can have a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening at step five, who says I can't have one at step one? I have people try to correct me all the time. And I'm like, well, you know, like we can debate theology, like, but I'm going to win. Because I know what I'm talking about, right? It's not me, though. I went to a meeting earlier today, and I'm not going to name the meeting, but they were reading out of non-conference approved literature, 15 minutes. Mine says 24, but, you know, I'll go by yours. yeah. I could explain the steps to you, but the reason that I get to step five and I stop is because anybody that hasn't been through the steps is not going to continue to understand what I'm talking about, and anybody who has been through the steps has had their own experience, and it's not my job to tell you what your experience is going to be, how it's going to look like, right? Some people don't feel that spiritual awakening until step 12, until they take other people through it, and when I take another man through the 12th step, I do get a new spiritual experience. My differentiating quality between the two is that I can't have an experience if I'm not awake. If I'm not awake, I'm just a dream, and I spent my entire life dreaming. So I have to have that spiritual awakening before a profound and sudden alteration in my way of thought and action. To come into these rooms, to come walk in those doors for the first time ever and tell somebody in a meaningful way, I need help. What would you call that besides profound and sudden alteration in my way of thought and action? I didn't never ask anybody for help before. To live the way that I lived and to ask, to let show any kind of weakness is a death sentence. I was so guarded. People hung out with me. The hippies let me stick around for as long as they did. I hung out with the hippies. Let's put it this way. I hung out with the hippies because they saw the sunshine and rainbows all the time, right? And I liked that. The hippies hung out with me because when the rain came, I had an umbrella. I was prepared to do the things that they weren't. So I forgot why I started saying that. Jeez. That's okay. Profound and sudden. Yeah, so to tell somebody else I need help, I'm the one that helps. I was. So yeah, I'm done talking about the steps. I'm going to talk about what life's like now. I have friends. I have people that love me. A couple years ago, I was in the backseat of my friend's car, and my best friend was sitting up front. And her daughter, the driver's daughter, was sitting in her car seat beside me. And I was the thought, I've got this voice in my head, right? This, the inner voice. Call it what you want. The way that I like to put it is, some of you might have thought about, when I said that, I've got this voice in my head, and it's like, what the hell is he talking about? That's the voice. That's the voice I'm talking about. But mine tells me crazy and absurd things, right? And in this specific instance, I'm sitting in the backseat of my friend's car, and this voice tells me, do you think they'd really hang out with you if they knew anything about your past? And my next thought was, you be quiet. These people are pretty gangster as well. And so, the things that they've done are... I love hanging out with the motley, the worst of the worst, right? I see somebody come in, and I hear them talk about whatever it is they're talking about, but the words they're expressing do not match up with the tone of their voice. They're like, oh, butterflies and rainbows, and I hear, I want to kill myself. And I'm like, I'm going to talk to that guy, because that's how I came in, right? I came in. And they asked, does anybody have a burning desire? And after a few months, I I'd wait for a few seconds, see if anybody else was going to do it. And then I'd be like, just before the chair started up, I'd raise my hand. And I'd be like, I'm Jacob. I'm an alcoholic. I want to get fucked up and kill myself right now. And everybody like, and I'd go into detail. And people would be like, oh my God. And how does he do that, right? And it's not how did I do it, it's why did I do it, right? Because if I come up to Lloyd after the meeting or before the meeting and I tell Lloyd, hey man, I'm gonna leave here and I'm gonna blow my brains out. Now it's all on Lloyd. Like if Lloyd doesn't, in my mind, right? If Lloyd doesn't do something, it's Lloyd's fault. Lloyd's gonna blame himself for the rest of his life because I killed myself. That's the way my mind works, right? But if I say it in an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, anybody who feels equipped to come up and talk to me afterwards is able to do so. You can't help me unless I tell you what's going on. I used to think you were all mind readers and I was the only one that wasn't blessed with the gift. Like some kind of weird, twisted version of The Truman Show with Jim Carrey. If you haven't seen it, it's amazing. But it made me think that I was schizophrenic for a long time. So maybe stay away from it. I don't know. I'm not your sponsor. On the topic of sponsor and sponsorship, right? I think I'm jumping all over the place more than I want to. I'm blaming Lloyd still. Just going to target him all night, right? So what was it? Sponsorship. The only job of a sponsor... My job as a sponsor is to take your hand and put it in the hand of your higher power, whatever that may be to you. It's not my job to tell you what your higher power is. My job is to take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is how I get you into contact with your higher power. I was getting, I was going through four, I told my sponsor, the former Hell's Angel, what my motivation for doing the steps was, why I wanted to get through them so quickly. And it was to get with this girl. She was cute. And I asked her out, and she said, I don't date guys who haven't got a year. And I was like, well, you just watched me pick up a one-year medallion. And she immediately shifted gears, which should have been my sign, right, to I don't date guys who haven't been through the steps. And I was like, shit. Okay. I gotta do this faster. I was talking to my sponsor. And I told him my motivation. And he was like, he stopped at a red light and he turned and he looked at me and he was like, are you gonna be fearless and thorough from the very start? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Like when this doesn't work, I'm gonna kill you and everybody else and myself anyway. So who cares, right? And he was like, cool. I don't care what your motivation is. I hear people talk about my motivation, it has to be for me. I have to do it for myself. I can't do it for another person. I can't do it for my dog. I don't care what your motivation is. Fearless and thorough from the very start. If we go through this, like it doesn't tell us a time frame. Go through it. Don't let that make you procrastinate, right? Don't be like, oh, I'm gonna take 5 years to do my fourth step. But it doesn't give us a time frame. People came up to me when I was talking about when I was doing my fourth step, and I had people come up after the meeting. My sponsor told me, if you share while you're doing your fourth step, you have to mention that you're working on your fourth step. So I quickly became known as Fourth Step Jacob because I share. I'm Jacob, I'm an alcoholic. My sponsor told me that if I'm gonna share, I need to mention that I'm on my fourth step, and then I would go into my share, just like that, like super fast, right? So people started calling me Fourth Step Jacob, and this one specific fellow that I can think of off the top of my head would come up to me almost every week and tell me, you need to hurry up on that fourth step. And I was like, Patrick, I didn't ask you for your opinion. Take it and go over there. Because you do not want me to get angry. And then add you to, like, you want to be on my fourth step? Because, like, you know, people get hurt. But he's one of my good friends now, right? It's weird. I told him, never mind. Anyway, how much time do I got left? 7 minutes. Jeez, it flies when I'm up here, huh? My ego is still super huge. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I'm this spiritual guru, in case you haven't figured it out by, like, the things I talk about, right? I'm not the spiritual giant. I have been told that I'm a cornerstone of sobriety in my community. One of the guys that I look up to came up to me the other day and told me, that I'm a leader. to the guys that come, even the guys with more time than me. And I was like, all I heard is you just called me Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. I swat away swords, and I lead hobbits to Mordor to burn rings, and I kill orcs. And never thought like that about myself now. And now I'm like, I don't know if my ego's getting bigger as I get into this, which is a dangerous thing. But I pray every day. I thank God for people like Lloyd. and the fellowship, right? I get on my knees every morning and I ask my higher power. I don't ask my higher power to keep me sober anymore. That's not part of my prayers. I ask my higher power to let me be of service to the next alcoholic, to remove these character defects from me. And at night, I thank it. Not for keeping me sober for another day, which it does on a constant basis, right? That's not me. I could not stay sober for 3 days without wanting to kill myself. So it's something else. I thank my higher power, though, for the fellowship, for the people in the rooms. Why am I in Tampa? I'm from Naples, and I'm up in Tampa, and I don't want to tell y'all too much about it, but it's a pretty good reason. I'm excited for the future for the first time in my life. I've got things. I don't care about the material things, though, right? I don't want to kill myself. And there's likely somebody in here right now that's not sure whether they're going to live through the night. If you're one of those people, we can't read your mind, right? You got to talk to someone. You don't have to do anything. I say you got to talk to somebody, but you don't got to. You can go home and stay quiet. But how well has that worked for you in the past? Because for me, it was almost a death sentence. I was like, I'm going to handle it. And then one day I didn't. And then I ended up here. And I started to get honest with the people that mattered. I feel like he's going to cue me here in a few seconds. I don't know. I've never been here before, bro. This is new. This is awesome. I wish there were more people. The honest, right? Jeez, what else should I say? What else can I say? I've got this guy. I'll end with this. I've got this guy. I'm at work. I am the authority figure for my two teams. And I've got this guy that works under me. And every time I tell him to do anything, he says, it's impossible. He's been working with me for over a year now. He goes and does the thing after he says it's impossible. But about 2 weeks ago, I came to the realization that everything is impossible. That means that anything that happens is an absolute miracle. You're all miracles. This building is a miracle. This everything, this program, this design for living is a miracle. I'm a miracle. Bless them, change me. Thank you all for helping me stay sober one more day. That's all I got.